All right. Welcome to another edition of Red versus Blue. My name is Mike Stark.
And I'm Keith Curry.
We took a little bit of a break, had some vacations worked in there, and we're going to take another break after this episode because, as I mentioned to Keith before we went on the air today, no matter how bad the world is, the politicians, for the most part, need to take time off. And the holidays seem to be that time. We're going to take the time off. We'll come back at the first of the year, and we will hit the ground running because that's when it's all going to happen. Right, Keith?
Primary season will be in full swing, and by March, it'll be Super Tuesday. So a lot of decisions are going to be made, good or bad.
Yeah, and so you need to subscribe to this podcast if you haven't already. If something were to break between now and the first of the year, if you're subscribed and we do a extra podcast, you'll get it. Also, like our Facebook page. If you're subscribing on iTunes or on Spotify, give us a good review if you would, please. Okay, a lot to cover because we've been away for a while. All of it seems to center around the two major candidates, Joe Biden and Donald Trump. And each of them have their own share of baggage, which we discuss on a regular basis. So what is new there?
Trump had another bad couple of weeks in court. He's, I guess, testifying today as they wrap up the testimony in his civil trial in New York. They'll do closing arguments, I think, January 10th. And then I fully expect the judge is going to find a judgment against the Trump Organization. And he's going to be out several hundred million dollars in assets for his lies that he told business-wise. So he continues to lose there. There continues to be progress in the criminal cases being filed both by the state of Georgia and by the U.S. Department of Justice. More people are beginning to talk to prosecutors. His gag order was reinstated, although he'll likely defy it for the most part, as he's done in the past. So he's had, what anybody would consider to be a very, very bad couple of weeks. He continues to ride strong in the polls, which is somewhat mystifying, but he does.
I won't bring it up again, Keith. You know what where I'm going with this.
I do.
When we started this podcast, you guaranteed me that it was going to reach a point. But, the criminal cases start in March, despite the possibility of delays.
They're all queued up and they will start in March. So we're off to the races with that. I mean, they start the day before Super Tuesday.
It's all going to be interesting and entertaining. And that's why we're here, of course, to keep it entertaining. The other thorn in Trump's side, and then we'll cover Biden in a minute, is Liz Cheney has been on literally every political program there is out there. She's out there with a new book, which also has some real interesting revelations in it. Have you followed any of that?
I have. And, Liz Cheney is a real profiling courage in my mind. She stood up on the committee. She dispassionately brought forth the evidence. And the evidence, I thought, was pretty compelling about the January 6th involvement. And for people who now suggest, as Vivek did last night in the debate, that the January 6th was a police diversion, that's just nonsense. Liz Cheney deserves a lot of credit for standing up for the conscience of the Republican Party and for being willing to say that if the Republicans don't break out of this cult fever, we will be a marginal party going forward in the future. And I give her a lot of credit for that.
Well, and she, in these interviews, also gives other Republicans a lot of credit for being heroes. When you consider that there really hasn't been anybody but Republicans who have testified against Trump and been involved in trying to build a case, they've all been Republicans. And it needs to be brought out that it's not just Liz Cheney, it's other Republicans like yourself who are not buying into the Trump cult, I'll call it. They're being heroic in standing up against this man.
That's a good point, Mike. And we should stop and pay credit to the patriots who served in the Trump administration, starting with Mike Pence and Bill Barr and other people who, the White House counsel and other cabinet members and people throughout the administration who stood up and said, no, we're not going to do this. No, you can't do this. No, you shouldn't do it. and basically talked him off the ledge on multiple occasions, including an order that was actually apparently drafted by his body man to immediately pull out of Afghanistan, of the Middle East, and out of NATO between Christmas and January. And that got to the Pentagon, and they said, "Who wrote this?" And they said, "I don't know." And they tracked it down, and basically the Secretary of Defense went to Trump and said, "You can't do this." And Trump sort of shrugged and said, "Well, okay, if they can't do it, I can't do it, but I, you know, I'd like to do it."
Right.
And it sort of went away. But we were that close to like just an absolute foreign policy military catastrophe. And it was patriots who had been Trump appointees or in some cases career officials who stopped that nonsense in its tracks. And they deserve the Hero's Medal.
Absolutely. And the fear, of course, is, and this is, there's been a lot of discussion in the last couple of weeks, that a lot of those guardrails, if he were to be elected, will be gone because the people he appoints next time will be fully on board with whatever he is looking to do, right?
Well, that's absolutely true. And Trump has now learned how people stop his impulses. And he will; they will be fully vetted to make sure that nobody that has the moral fortitude to stop those impulses actually gets appointed to a job. Not only that, but he wants to, there's currently about 3,000 political appointees in the government, about 1,000 of which are confirmed by the Senate. The rest are simply appointed. He wants to go and take another 7,000 to 10,000 civil service employees and make them at-will employees where the president can fire them and replace them. If you do that, you really go down to where the professional management of the government is now run by hacks. And that's just going to be a disaster for America and for the world.
So do you think that if Trump were to win, that'll be the last election?
Well, it might not be the last election, but America will be a changed place. I was at an event this morning with a guy from the Sons of the American Revolution. In 2026, we're going to celebrate the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. Most of us can remember back to 1976 for the bicentennial.
Sure.
I can think of nothing more abhorrent to the anniversary of American independence than Donald Trump being president during that celebration. Can you imagine what a absolute desecration that would be to the American patriotic idea? And that's why I'm absolutely with Liz Cheney, is that Donald Trump must be defeated.
We're going to get to Biden in a second, but the Congress could be enablers for him as well if he were to get elected, right?
Well, he could. And the Republicans, you know, with Santos gone, with McCarthy leaving at the end of the month, will be down to a 3-vote majority in the House. Number one, any of the crazies can block stuff. But number two, he, the Speaker Johnson, is going to be challenged to actually get stuff passed through the House. So I think the House is going to continue to be dysfunctional for a while until those issues are resolved, because there are people in the caucus, more than three, who don't want to do anything, who are part of the chaos caucus. And that's going to be a real challenge.
Let's talk briefly about Johnson and his fundraising ability, which you've brought up in the past as not being very good at all.
Well, I think Speaker Johnson is going to learn that when you trash American corporations, as some of the candidates did last night, attacking the Boeing Corporation, America's primary defense contractor and airplane manufacturer, and one of the nation's, I think, top 10 employers, and they quit giving money to you, that it becomes harder and harder to raise it from other people. McCarthy was exceptionally good at that. And so that, more than anything else, is going to be a real blow to the Republicans in their quest to continue to maintain the House. Johnson is unproven as a fundraiser. We don't know whether he can raise money or not because he's never done it. But I will just tell you that if you decide you want to be an anti-chamber of commerce, anti-business, anti-corporation, anti-bank person, you're going to have a very short call list when it comes to making calls to raise money.
Right. And McCarthy was a good fundraiser, right?
He was an exceptional fundraiser. He would travel the country. That's what he did. He traveled the country to, you know, little towns and cities across the country, raised millions and millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars on behalf of Republican candidates, and did it very, very effectively.
We'll have to watch all of that. Now, let's go over to the other side. The president of the United States, we bring it up every time, and it's something he can't battle. Age being seems to be one of the main issues with him, with both Republicans and Democrats.
And by a 60% margin. So, I mean, he can't do anything about it. And the more they trot him out, the more he talks in front of the public, the more he squints looking at the teleprompter, the more people look at him and say, that guy is really, really old.
Right.
It's unfortunate. Filing is going to close for Super Tuesday tomorrow. By the time this is broadcast, it will have been closed. You know, there's no opportunity for another candidate to get in. So if Biden is to not be the nominee, Biden is going to have to decide himself and take himself out. And he shows no sign of doing that. But it shows every sign of being a train wreck candidate. He's one public appearance away from making a slip that will be considered fatal.
Right.
You know, either with a foreign leader or in front of a teleprompter or in front of an interview or during a debate or just impromptu conversation. You know, he'll lose his place. He'll lose where he was. He'll turn around and shake hands with somebody not standing there again. People will just say, OK, not him.
Right. It's ironic, though, isn't it, that it would take those old school values to take him down, yet those old school values have never applied to Donald Trump.
No, Donald Trump is in his own category. He has defied traditional political standards that would have disqualified anybody. And he continues. And it's a black mark on the country that that happens to be the case.
Now, Biden has his own legal problems as well. As you put it, and I love this, the Keystone Cops in Congress haven't been able to tie everything together, but there is some pretty strong evidence that there's some hanky-panky going on, right?
They haven't put the puzzle together, but they put all the pieces on the table. And what we now know is that money went from a Chinese company to Hunter Biden's firm to Joe Biden. And some of it also went via his brother, Jim Biden, back to Biden. Apparently, Joe Biden decided he wanted to be in the banking business, so he's making loans to his family all the time. They used to say, you know, it was Mark Felt, to Deep Throat of Watergate, who said, right, the key is follow the money. And the money is right now telling a very sordid tale about how Joe Biden sold his name and brand for the benefit of his son and how he profited from it as well.
Are they going to be able to put this together, though? Do they have the competence to do that?
Well, they have the impetuousness to go forward with impeachment. Whether they have the competence to put forward a case that is compelling or not remains to be seen and is somewhat doubtful. But I believe that Johnson will be forced by some of the more impetuous and intemperate people in the caucus to push impeachment forward. That will provide some additional subpoena power, and there may be some moments in testimony that are dramatic, as there was with Alexander Butterfield and the revelation of the tapes. So, right, you know, when people are under oath, you never know what they're going to say.
Sure.
But there is a bigger risk, I think, that the impeachment will backfire as it did against Bill Clinton and serve the interests of the Democrats. Because I'm not confident with Jim Comer or with Jim Jordan or with any of the other so-called Republican investigators that they have the competence to put the case together. Notwithstanding the fact that the pieces of a controversy, the pieces of a scandal, the money trail is compelling.
And I hate to compare crimes, but the crimes are kind of different. Biden's crimes are to enrich himself, whereas Trump's crimes are crimes of power, crimes of anti-democracy. There's a big split between those two.
You know, in politics, you can always tell the people who believe the rules don't apply to them. And invariably and inevitably, they always do.
Absolutely. Okay, what else we got with Biden? The economy still is just lagging. It's not going anywhere. But I was thinking, in the last month, looking at my own personal stock portfolio, the stock market has been doing amazing the last month.
November was one of the top 5 months, I think, in the last 20 years. So it was a huge gain economically. Now, the reason for the stock market gain is because everybody looks around and says, okay, the economy is not heating up anymore. We're probably going to go into a small recession, but that means interest rates are going to come down. This was all predicated, I think, on the stock market movement. Was all predicated on a belief that interest rates are going to fall. Now, if interest rates are falling, that also means that business activity and job creation may also be falling. So, I mean, you know, he is in a washer-dryer thing that even good news can be bad news for him.
I also see that the American people, in general, the average guy at home is still feeling the effects of a bad economy. And whether the stock market's up and down doesn't affect him at all. All he knows is he goes to the gas pump. They've gone down a little bit, but he goes to the gas pump and has to pay all this for gas and food and all of that. And it doesn't, the stock market means nothing to that guy.
Well, that's right, unless he's got a pension. But prices continue to be high. People's view of inflation continues to be high. If you're looking for a job and can't find one, that's an issue. You know, real estate is a problem, and interest rates are high enough that people can't, you know, buy real estate like they might otherwise do. So so none of those problems are getting any better.
And, of course, the border, which Democrats are also concerned about as well. And I was thinking about this before we went on the air. Is this something that maybe Biden's holding back on a little bit? And then once the campaign starts, he's got some sort of plan to shut the border down and put an end to all of this? I don't know.
Well, he'd probably get a 5-point bump in the polls if he did, but I don't think he can. I just think the institutional resistance within his party is such. Let's remember the very first Democratic debate that happened 4 years ago when Julian Castro was there up on the podium and said, "I hope nobody here is going to suggest that we close the border," or some other ridiculous nonsense.
Right.
And everybody raised their hand to say, "I'm with Castro here that, you know, we should have open borders and open whatever." And that sort of set the stage for the Democrats. And now they are in a quandary because everybody sees the people sleeping in Eagle Pass, Texas. Everybody sees the people sleeping on the streets in New York or Los Angeles. And they want to blame somebody for it. And his policies have been incoherent in terms of addressing it.
And when you say everybody, that crosses party lines, I believe.
Absolutely. You know, San Francisco, New York, Los Angeles, that's the number one issue on people's minds is to do something about that. And the whole Israel-Hamas thing has heightened the idea. And even the testimony recently this week of the FBI director, people coming across the border. They arrested 25 Chinese people of military age at the border. So whether it's from China or Iran or Syria or El Salvador or Venezuela, we don't know who's coming across and we don't know what their goals are. But we've arrested a terrorist the other day in Las Vegas who had an ISIS flag and wanted to blow something up. And people are randomly shooting people. It's a real threat.
Well, the border is something we got to watch. The economy is something we got to watch. Is there any other baggage we need to talk about in regard to Biden?
Well, the other big issue that's got him completely tied in knots is the Israel-Hamas war, because I think Biden's finest moment was when he came out after October 7th and stood firmly with Israel and then found a huge backlash among Democratic interest groups, young people, progressives, the campus crowd, all of those people who basically stood with the Palestinians and who denied Israel's right to exist. And he then backpedaled and, you know, tried to, you know, tie the hands of how Netanyahu prosecutes the war and how he roots out Hamas. And then come to find out that we now have the stories of the horrific rapes, of the barbarism that was committed by Hamas during the attack. And now you've got the Democrats on the record who said Hamas is just a political faction and all of that. And Biden now looks wishy-washy on an issue that is now where he was firmly sort of on one side.
Sure.
And the nature of Democratic politics within the party make it very difficult for him to be specific. I mean, telling him that we can't reduce the borders of Gaza to make a security zone for Israel because he doesn't want you to, or having, you know, Harris go out there and stand with the Palestinians. It's a mixed message. And Americans lose confidence in our foreign policy when that happens.
And this also has bred a lot of anti-Semitism as well. I do find it interesting, however, that a lot of this is coming from the left. There was a time not so long ago when most of the anti-Semitism came from the right. And all we have to do is think back to Charlottesville. Republicans didn't really put that down as a problem.
To their discredit, that's true. I mean, there is sort of a pro-Nazi, you know, group of the skinheads and the people who sort of become part of the Trump periphery. I would say it was more visible on the right then, and it was more latent on the left at that time. Now it's come out of its latency, and we see it on the campuses. We see it with these Palestinian organizations.
Right. It just is interesting that there's anti-Semitism from two extreme parties that would have nothing in common other than that.
Well, and it just shows you the challenge of being Jewish. You know, you get it from both sides.
Sure.
And you have to be aware of it from both sides and look for allies where you can. And it's an unfortunate part of our society.
Yeah, it really is. Ukraine, I guess we're about to run out of money to support them. Is that what your understanding is?
It is. And again, another disgrace for the Republicans who have tried to tie Ukraine money to the border and Israel money to the border. And in fact, we should make an investment in the border. We should do something. The Democrats should figure out how to get that done. And it's bollocked up in politics. But, you know, because Joe Biden is standing with Ukraine, there are Republicans who are not standing with Ukraine. Mm. If it had been a Republican president, they would be there. And that is the most, I think, disgraceful thing that's happened in the last year. Now, there's still a majority in Congress of Republicans who support Ukraine, and we need to get this bill passed, and we'll see if Speaker Johnson has the leadership to get it done.
Anything else we need to discuss before we take our Christmas holiday break?
Well, when we come back, Congress will or will not have supported Ukraine and Israel, will or will not have made an investment in border security, will or would not have set the stage for a budget continuation. The Republican majority will be down to 3. Bob Menendez will still be in the Senate. And what I think was funny was that George Santos, the day after he left the House, went on this cameo thing where, you know, for $200 or $300, he will record a message for somebody on your behalf. So Senator John Fetterman had him record a message to Bob Menendez, basically, you know, mocking him and encouraging him to follow suit and retire.
I thought it was unbelievable. Again, part of the entertainment aspect of politics today, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, if Santos can stay out of jail, this guy has got a career in some form of media. Am I right?
He's got media, or just like the guy who was the subject of the Catch Me If You Can, the Pan Am pilot who was not
gotcha.
A pilot. And then that guy went on the lecture circuit, and he made hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, speaking at corporate conferences. Santos can do the same thing.
Yeah, if he can stay out of jail. And that's
a big
questionable
if.
At this point. All right. Well, Keith, thank you again. We want to wish everybody a happy holiday, Merry Christmas, whatever it is that you're celebrating. And we will be back next year. Subscribe to the podcast. And have a happy holiday, Keith.
And you too, Mike. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, everybody.